Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
Hello and welcome to Intersection, where people and ideas meet, online and on KBIA. I'm Reuben Stern. I'm going to start today's program with three letters, D, G, B. If that makes you think of a certain high school football player who's headed to MU this fall, then maybe you're a sports fan, or maybe your awareness simply shows how landing the top high school football recruit in the nation has become big news, even for non-sports fans, in a town like Columbia. In case you don't know, the initials stand for Doriel Green Beckham. Last week, the 18-year-old from Springfield announced that he had chosen to attend Mizzou in the fall. He's widely considered the top high school recruit in the country, and he has been courted by many big-name football schools, including Florida, USC, Ohio State, and Notre Dame, just to name a couple of them. Before he officially announced his intent to attend Missouri, Green Beckham visited the campus a week ago, Saturday, and found a highly orchestrated welcome, including a crowd inside the Mizzou Arena already chanting his initials as part of the M-I-Z-Z-O-U cheer. So, what does it mean that a single high school athlete can generate so much enthusiasm just by showing up on campus? What kind of work goes into landing the most sought-after player in the country? And how does the college football recruiting process affect the athletes themselves? Our guests today are going to help us unpack a few of those questions and perhaps a few more. First, Greg Bowers is the sports editor of the Columbia Missourian and an associate professor at the MU School of Journalism. Prior to that, he was the sports editor of the York Dispatch in York, Pennsylvania. Welcome to the program, Greg Bowers.
Thank you.
Also with us today, Ben Fredrickson is a former intern and freelancer for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. He's been covering Green Beckham since the summer of last year. Welcome to the program, Ben Fredrickson.
Thanks.
We also have at the table Karen Mitchell. She's an assistant professor in the MU School of Journalism. She spent many years as a photojournalist working for the Des Moines Register and the Associated Press. Welcome, Karen Mitchell.
Thanks, Reuben.
And we have also by phone today a full house, Bruce Feldman, a sports columnist and commentator for CBS Sports and the author of three books, including one that goes deep inside the world of college football recruiting. Welcome to our program, Bruce Feldman.
Thank you.
Glad to have you with us by phone. We hope that those of you in our audience will also join our conversation today as well. What do you make of all the attention afforded to young athletes? Give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org, or you can go online to our online chat at kbia.org. Follow the link for Intersection. You can converse with us and the audience members there. We're going to start with this question. Bruce Feldman, I want to start with you. What is the significance of a school like Missouri landing a recruit like Doriel Green Beckham?
Well, it's huge for a program that's going into the SEC next year, and I think it's a statement. You're able to keep the nation's top player, who everybody wants, keeping them at home in the state is a big deal. And it's not only a big deal for your talent and what you're able to do on the field going forward. You get this kid who everyone seems to think he's ready to make an impact right away. But it also tells everybody else, including all the other future blue chip kids, hey, if Missouri's good enough for DGB, maybe I should think of going to this school too. And it's that cachet. It reinforces the notion that Mizzou is kind of one of those cool schools. And perception is a big deal with recruits. And I think that's why it's so significant for Gary Pinkel and the school to land a kid like this.
Okay. Ben, maybe you can tell us a little bit about what Gary Pinkel and the team did in order to get this player here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking to the coaching staff who were able to talk about the recruitment a lot more in detail after he actually signed. They did everything as far as pretty much offered him a scholarship going into his freshman year of high school, up to the point where his last visit here, they had talked to a Springfield restaurant about how to make his favorite fried sushi and had that for him with every visit that he had, especially the last one, I think breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So, I mean, they had everything planned. They took a coach bus down there. They took Gary Pinkel showed up in a chopper, a helicopter at campus. I mean, I think they pretty much pulled out the stops. Coach David Yost, the offensive coordinator and wide receivers coach, said that a quarterback's coach said that it was the hardest they'd ever recruited a player since he'd been there, and he's been there quite a while.
Right. So the coach shows up in a helicopter to say hello. How normal is that? That seems pretty extraordinary to me.
I don't know if Mizzou has ever done it before. I haven't been covering college recruiting that long, but I wouldn't imagine that it's a regular occurrence.
Greg, and then Bruce, maybe you guys could help us out with that. How normal is that a coach shows up in a helicopter to try to get a player to come join his team?
I think in Missouri, this is all very not normal. This is all new. This is new territory for Missouri. I think Bruce was right. The importance of this signing is probably going to have a greater symbolic value than it has real value. I mean, it remains to be seen how good of a football player he is once he gets here. But already, him signing here and him deciding that Missouri is a good choice could send a message to other recruits. It sends a message around the country that Missouri's got a football program that Green Beckham thinks is good enough to play for. But Missouri, this has gone on at big schools for quite a while. Missouri just isn't used to this. I mean, when he showed up at the campus, like you said, a couple of weeks ago now, I guess, it was like he was a Beatle or Justin Bieber or something. There were fans hanging off the overpasses on the highway. It was nuts. It was crazy stuff. And again, I don't think Missouri has experienced this because I believe this is one of the highest recruits that Missouri's ever signed, certainly recently and probably ever.
Second number.
Yeah, I would agree. It's rare. It's not unprecedented for a school to use helicopters. There are some schools that have done that for coaches to maybe drop in and out and make a little bit of fanfare or splash because it even gives the notion of, wow, this is a big deal for them to do this. But it's not unprecedented, but it is very rare.
Right. Now, Bruce, your book, Meat Market, Inside the Smash Mouth World of College Football Recruiting, spent a year chronicling what goes on inside of a football recruiting effort. The one at Ole Miss is the one that you followed. How does this reflect on what you found out when you spent a year observing that particular school's recruiting efforts?
Well, it's everything for these programs in terms of if you get good players, it gives you such a good chance, to compete going forward. So you're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars are invested into the pursuit and finding out, who are the best kids around the country. And then all of this manpower hours are in not only building the relationship with the kid, but maybe the kid's parents or the high school coaches or anybody who's close to them. And then also determining, what's going to work with these kids. And also you're trying to figure out, like the guys were saying before, we don't know how good these guys really are. I mean, until you get them on your campus, when you're actually coaching them, you really don't know. So a big deal for these guys was just to try to get the kid at first, the first big coup is to try to get him to come to your summer camp, before his senior year, before his junior year. So you can coach the kid and you get a better sense of how good he is, how tough he is, how smart he is in terms of how does he take your coaching, how does he react to certain things, how competitive is he. And then you also get a sense from the kid, he gets to know what the place is like. So if they get them on their campus to able to see him and spend some time around with him, that's really the first big step. But now, because this recruiting process, because coaches are always trying to get out in front of the other coaches with these relationships, the recruiting process starts so much earlier now. Just in the time I worked on Meat Market, 5 years ago, in that time, it was about 2 months ahead of schedule than it was the previous year. So it's a very competitive, cutthroat world, and technology is ever evolving and how it plays out. You go back about 10 years ago when the internet really was something that embraced recruiting and the business model really stepped into it. And I think that elevated recruits not just into the evaluation process, but really about how kids become commodities and people, not just the coaches, but now diehard fans, and not even really diehard fans anymore, but just big fans of the school, know about who all these kids are.
Yeah, we're going to come back to that.
All this thing is kind of funnel together.
Yeah, Bruce, I want to come back to the internet and its effect on all of this that's going on. First, I want to remind our audience, though, this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today, we're talking about the recruitment of top high school athletes onto college teams. Joining me in the studio are Columbia, Missourian sports editor Greg Bowers, reporter Ben Fredrickson, and MU journalism assistant professor Karen Mitchell. On the phone is CBS sports columnist and commentator Bruce Feldman. For those of you in our audience, if you are an athlete who was recruited or you have some other knowledge about the recruiting process, we'd love to hear from you. You can give us a call at 573-882-8925. Feel free to call in with questions for our panelists as well. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. We'd like to remind you that Intersection is broadcast live every Monday at 2 on KBIA and online at kbia.org. You can join our online chat at that time by going to kbia.org, following the link for Intersection. In terms of these efforts and the commoditization of these players, in the case of the player that Mizzou just got, Ben, how was that playing out in his world as a high school athlete being recruited by all these schools?
I mean, I think it's something that definitely probably made a huge difference on his life. I mean, you got to understand that this wasn't just attention that he had been getting, you know, this year. Basically, ever since he got into high school, he's been getting offers from these schools, and it's just been a slow burn until you know, right before signing week when everyone kind of made their last pitch. In January, I think he narrowed it down to 5 schools, which I'm sure maybe took – I think it took some of the pressure off from other schools, but also added on more pressure from the schools that he said were still in the running. And I know his family did a very good job, or they thought they did, you know, protecting him from that. And they kind of wanted to give him a chance to be a kid still. You know, he still went to prom. He still played basketball. So I think they did try to protect that, you know, the chance for him to be a kid. But I can't imagine what it was like to have, you know, pounds and pounds of letters rolling in every day, along with coaches showing up in the hallway, and helicopters flying into your school, things like that. It's got to be absurd for him, I would imagine.
Right. Karen Mitchell, what do you make of all this?
I get nervous for the student. They're student athletes, and my fear in a lot of these cases is that the student aspect gets lost in all of this. I also feel that it takes a really mature, level-headed young person to be able to handle this kind of attention. And I don't know DGB, so I'm not sure how well he's going to be able to handle it. But it sounds like he has a really good family supporting him, and he's going to need that. Not everyone is, for example, a Kim English, who is a senior this year and really is a true leader on the basketball court, very level-headed young man. I hope Doriel is able to achieve that.
Uh-huh. Greg, your thoughts?
The student part is lost in all of this, definitely. it's, you know, I don't think these guys are recruited because they're good students or anything like that. He's being recruited to play football. I remember when I was in Pennsylvania, like you mentioned, before I came to Missouri, I experienced one of the first ones I remember was LeBron James as a high school player was a huge deal. I mean, he was a huge deal playing in Ohio, and he played some games in Pennsylvania, New Jersey. And I began to realize that this was something else when one of my sports reporters took his day off and drove 10 hours to Ohio to watch LeBron James play high school basketball. I thought that was weird then. I still think it's weird now. But obviously LeBron James went on to become, you know, one of the best basketball players in the NBA. So, you know, this is not new. The internet has, as it has with most things, it's magnified it. And now suddenly, you know, Twitter and things like that, rumors get started really quickly. Things get larger than they should be. And where, you know, the other day when he signed at the Missourian, we put together a file that had not only every player that Missouri signed, but you could actually click on it and get videos of every player that Missouri signed. That was an amazing development. I mean, that was just you can look at these high school kids from anywhere in the country and evaluate them for yourself.
Right. Let's talk about that, Bruce. In your book, this was 2005, 2006 when you researched Meat Market. The sports teams were dealing with videotape, and there's a lot of scenes in there where you're talking about the coaches and a stack of videotapes. Is that still the case, or has what Greg just talked about, video online, completely changed the way that these teams track their potential players?
No, it has changed somewhat, but you got to keep in mind that these schools still want to evaluate what the game film that they're getting, because sometimes you could see something online and it could be doctored, or you just can't necessarily verify whether it's been sped up or anything like that. But the game film is a big deal for them, and they pay, you know, tens of thousands of dollars to recruiting services to get that. And that's what one of the big things that they do in the evaluation process. And it's it's something that's they put so much money into and so much of a commitment time wise, because it's not only the kids are going to evaluate in terms of, you know, going back to maybe their freshman and sophomore years, they want to see some growth, they want to see a lot of, you know, as much as they can. They're also using, you know, the staff that I was around at Ole Miss, they evaluated kids, you know, their summer workouts, they evaluated basketball game footage, anything they could kind of weigh in on or get some kind of sense of athletic movement or competition, they wanted to see it.
Right. I was really struck in reading your book about the lengths that these teams go to in terms of the information they gather and the number of players that they're gathering this information about. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's why it's so different, college football recruiting, than college basketball. College basketball, schools are only signing maybe two or three kids a year, whereas in college football, you're often getting 25, even up to 30 recruits. And for that, you know, really the premise of my book was I wanted to start from one signing class to the next, basically cover it 365 days to see how, you know, their recruiting board may start out with, they may look at 1,000 kids to get to that 25. And there are so many factors that go into it. You may love a kid athletically and what he looks like as a player, but the missing piece in this is the academics. If a kid has no grades, you may like him, but you realize his best hope is he may have to go to junior college. He may never qualify. So, you know, when Greg was talking before about, I think it was Greg who had mentioned before about schools evaluating and offering a kid before his freshman year of high school, who knows how well a kid is going to do academically, if he's even going to be able to qualify, if he'll have the right core grades or what his ACT is going to be. So much of those pieces go into it, and then you have to find out the kid who may have loved you when you were the first school to offer, what happens if LSU or Alabama or Nick Saban comes in a month before signing day? That's probably a bigger deal to him.
Right.
And so you have to go look on to the next kid. So that's why it really becomes such a shell game of sorts.
And that is the case with DGB, right? Mizzou offered him quite early.
I think that was one of the reasons Mizzou was so happy to land him, because they had put in so much work so early and for such a consistent period of time that they were, I'm sure, afraid that, you know, Saban or Mac Brown or one of those guys, you know, who maybe had a little more flash to their name in their program would come in and kind of pull them out from under him and ruin that, you know, those years of hard work. And I think that was one of the main reasons you saw they were so happy with actually getting him to sign and announce.
Right. Okay. For those of you in our audience, I want to remind you again that this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today, we're talking about the recruiting of top athletes onto college teams. Joining me in the studio are Columbia, Missourian sports editor Greg Bowers, reporter Ben Fredrickson, and MU Journalism Assistant Professor Karen Mitchell. On the phone with us as well, we have CBS sports columnist and commentator Bruce Feldman. For those of you in our audience, we hope you'll join our conversation as well. To what degree do you think the celebrity treatment of high school recruits may be affecting college sports, or the athletes themselves, perhaps? We'd love to hear your opinion. Share your thoughts. Give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. Greg Bowers, your thoughts in terms of Mizzou's effort to get this student and how early in the process they were there and how that played out.
Yeah, let me add to something Bruce said. That with all the study and all the years of effort and recruiting that goes on, this is still largely a crapshoot. There are as many top recruits who didn't work out as who did. And ESPN magazine, this issue, has an interesting article that shows there's very weak correlation between strong recruiting classes and wins down the road. That's why I said earlier that the effect of Green Beckham signing with Missouri may well end up being more symbolic than real, in the sense of what it means to the program, what it means to the university, rather than does he catch a lot of passes and win a lot of football games. So the intensity of all this, and Ben's right, there was a huge intensity on the part of Missouri's part. was probably for that. I mean, that would be the goal. Whether, you know, it's hard to predict. As anybody who works at a university knows, it's hard to predict what an 18-year-old kid's going to turn out to be. You know, I work with journalism kids, and it's hard to predict who's going to be a good journalist, who's going to not be a good journalist. Some of them, the light bulb goes on sooner than others, and you know, that's just a crapshoot. I mean, it's hard to know. The best you can do is be there when the light bulb does go on. That's the best you can do, I think.
Yeah, Bruce, your thoughts on that in terms of the effort put in versus the value gotten out of these athletes that are recruited?
Yeah, I mean, Greg's right. There's a big component of this, and I've used this term a lot, is it is a crapshoot. You know, I'd use the example 4 years ago, the Stanford recruiting class, a lot of these online recruiting services, the Rivals and Scout.com and ESPN.com, had it ranked somewhere around 50. Well, you look at that class, Andrew Luck, who's probably going to be the first pick in the NFL draft, was one of, I would say, five or six guys who will be top 50 draft picks in that class. If you were to re-rank it after what they've become and proven and what they've done, that would be probably a top two or three class, not number 50. And the class that was number one, according to ESPN.com, was the University of Miami recruiting class. Well, 4 years later, that class never went to a BCS bowl game. It never even won a bowl game. And this year, they were just 6-6, where most of those kids were seniors. So it's very much a crapshoot. What's different about college football than college basketball recruiting is, with college basketball recruiting, in the summer, you get basically the top 500 kids together, all playing against each other in these summer AAU camps or in sneaker camps, and they're basically playing the same sport they'll be playing in college. Whereas with high school recruiting, you'll get these kids, and they're from all over the country, and they're not playing college football or football. They're basically playing, doing some drills. They may get tested, but you can't really tell. It's not really the same sport. Even if it's 7-on-7, which is like passing league stuff, it's guys in shorts and T-shirts. There's no physical aspect of it. And then the other component of this, beyond just, you know, kids vary because they're playing different positions, but you're talking about a kid who's 17 or 18 years old. Well, 4 years from now, that kid who's 6'5", 210 pounds, he may end up being 6'5", 280 pounds. Whereas his body and his position may be radically different, where in college basketball, that kid who's a point guard or that kid who's a power forward, that's probably what they're going to be, you know, 2 or 3 years later. So it's really, I won't say it's blind luck because it's not that, but it is much more of a murky process.
Right. I want to bring in a question from our chat room here. John in the chat room says this general question. Some of the, quote, insiders have stated that FSU recruited to a certain extent based off the service ratings, like the services that rate the players, but that's no longer done now under the new regime. How common a practice do you think it is for some of the major programs to be relying on some outside service rankings for their players as opposed to just using their own intel to decide who they're going to go after?
I think they're basing off, you know, some of them may be basing off lists and star systems, but they're not going to, if let's say Rivals.com says this is the best defensive end in the country, they're not going to go sight unseen and not evaluate him, because quite honestly, most of the people who do the evaluations for those, for the internet sites, which are more based for the consumers and fans, I'm not talking about the ones that the actual recruiting sites, which are the ones that the schools use, which are really film services. These other ones, which the fans can see on the internet, most of the evaluation is done by guys who are never coaches to begin with. So they don't really have, now that doesn't mean that they don't have any insight, but they're not going to base their evaluation off the intel that these actual college coaches will do, because they're the ones who are a lot more hands-on. They may have coached them. Their level of expertise is higher. They're looking at a lot more film. And they're also actually presented with a true picture of what the academics are like, because they're seeing the actual transcript, not what some high school coach or some kid is relaying to them, because they know they're putting it out there, so you may get some kind of spin. I mean, so the colleges, even if they may be, you know, taking, you know, praising, saying, oh, we got this many four-star kids, I think some of that gets overblown, that schools are just recruiting off lists or recruiting who the internet sites are telling them. I think what it really comes back to is which of these schools are spending the most time doing the evaluation.
Ben Fredrickson, you're nodding your head.
I think in Mizzou's case, they do a little bit of both. I think in the past, and I think even up to this past season, they've paid for certain recruiting services where they get, you know, the videos and the kind of the intel on some guys and things like that. But I know for a fact that they would never recruit a player that they hadn't had a chance to go and watch and evaluate and kind of see in person. So I think especially the case with Doriel. Like, obviously, as word got out that he was the number one player in the country according to, you know, Rivals, they didn't just take that, you know, for their word. They were down there, they'd watched him play. And then, I mean, he had the essentials where it's a bizarre story where he didn't send out any game tape. Their family did not release any game films. He didn't mail those to any of those college who offered to him. They were very private, and the school just kind of found out and came to him, really. So that kind of shows that, I mean, schools are kind of on the ground and looking for guys actively. But he had the other essentials. He had, you know, won the state title in the 100-meter dash. He was a state basketball MVP. So there were certain things that he did besides, you know, really hitting the recruiting trail hard that got him attention, just kind of in his natural athletic ability. And I think a lot of the schools use a combination of kind of on-the-ground evaluation combined with getting some help for maybe players that are outside of their interest areas where they can send a guy to go watch a game or have a kind of a connection of coaches they can talk to.
Right. And what are the – I mean, there's got to be some limits on what the schools can do here, right? Where's the fine line between what they're definitely allowed to do and where they're doing things that – are riding the line
jump in on that.
Yeah.
They're not allowed to, like they would in the old days, and I'm talking, you know, 25 years ago, where you'd hear stories of coaches basically spending so much time at a high school in the last month of the recruiting where they're basically like de facto substitute teachers. And they can't, they're limited about, like, a head coach can only do one actual in-home visit with a kid, whereas the assistants...
But no limit on how he gets there, right?
Be there basically every week towards the end of the recruiting process once a week.
And those, so are pretty, yeah.
Those kinds of limits are very specific in terms of what the NCAA allows, how many times they can call them, mm-hmm. a week, everything like that.
And even in Green Beckham's case, he actually supposedly accidentally ran into Bobby Petrino at an all-star high school football game for the Army All-American Bowl, and that Petrino was not actually able to visit him later on in that last week because of that run, and because other coaches would have reported him, and he would have been in a violation.
Right. But his last week before signing day, he had a lot of visits, right?
Yeah, I think everybody, the top four, I don't think Alabama went, but all the other Texas, Oklahoma, coaches from Arkansas, and then Missouri went multiple times a week.
Fascinating. And then he made his official visit to Mizzou right before signing day.
Yeah,
as well,
the weekend
right?
before, and then that's when the coaches – so he came to Mizzou that Saturday, then all the coaches had the visits, and then he made his decision, you know, on Wednesday.
Okay. I'm going to remind our audience here, this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about the recruiting efforts to get top athletes onto college teams. Joining me in the studio are Columbia, Missourian sports editor Greg Bowers, freelance reporter Ben Fredrickson, and MU Journalism Assistant Professor Karen Mitchell. Also on the phone with us is CBS sports columnist and commentator Bruce Feldman. After the break, we'll also hear from Dave Ridpath. He's an assistant professor of sports administration at Ohio University. We hope that you and our audience will join the conversation as well. You can give us a call. Our number is 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. We also have an online chat going. If you go to kbia.org and follow the link for Intersection, there you'll find the video stream of today's program along with an online chat. We hope to hear from you there or by phone. We'll be back after a short break. Stick around. And welcome back. This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about the recruiting efforts for top athletes onto college teams. Joining me in the studio are Columbia, Missourian sports editor Greg Bowers, freelance reporter who has written for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Ben Fredrickson, and MU journalism assistant professor Karen Mitchell. Also on the phone with us, CBS sports columnist and commentator Bruce Feldman. We're also going to hear this half hour from Dave Ridpath. He's an assistant professor of sports administration at Ohio University. For those of you in our audience, to what degree do you think the celebrity treatment of high school recruits may be affecting college sports or the athletes themselves? Share your thoughts. Give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org, or you can weigh in at our online chat room. Go to kbia.org, follow the link for Intersection, and there you'll find a video stream and our online chat. We were talking over the break a little bit. Some concerns you have, Karen Mitchell, after this scenario has played out with this number one recruit, Mizzou, flying down in a helicopter to visit him. Where does this go next?
That's what I'm wondering. I think it's great that Missouri landed the number one recruit, but I worry, in general, I worry about the next guy or the next female athlete. When you've recruited so heavily one guy to the point of flying in a helicopter, which is really expensive if you don't know, and to the point of having specialized meals for him, what do you do for the next recruit? How do you get him here? Is he going to want, he's going to want bigger and better than what Dorio got. How do you manage that?
Greg, what do you think? How's that going to play out, do you think?
You just do it again. I mean, you find out what his favorite meal is, and you find out what might impress him. I think one of the reasons we're seeing this as odd as it, as we're seeing this is because it hasn't happened at Missouri. But Penn State, which I covered when we were back in Penn State, was doing this all the time, trying to lure recruits in. And some of the big schools like Alabama, LSU, Florida, this happens more frequently. This just hasn't happened before at Missouri. If it happens again, I think you'll see a very similar effort tailored to this new kid, whatever they can find out about him as far as like what he likes to eat or what might impress him. But it'll be more of the same.
Okay. Dave Ridpath, are you with us?
I am.
Terrific. Thanks for joining us, Dave Ridpath, an assistant professor of sports administration at Ohio University. Dave, what do you make of all this?
Well, it's been interesting listening to everyone. I mean, it's just in many ways become a bit of a circus, if you will. But it's kind of the way of the world.
The way of the world. Has it always been this way?
I mean, to an extent. I think that, you know, you heard from Bruce that pretty eloquently stated that, you know, things have changed over the past even 2, 3, 4, 5 years. But the pursuit of these athletes has been pretty intense, I think, for many, many years. It's just been amplified by the use of social media and these recruiting services that you've been talking about.
Okay, the use of social media. I mean, Ben, what can you talk about there? When Bruce wrote his book about the recruiting efforts, Twitter was barely off the ground. At this point, you know, most of these players probably have Twitter accounts, right?
Yeah, Doriel does. I mean, he's got thousands of people following him. I think I saw a story where he has more followers than any other of the top recruits in the list. But I mean, you know, it's thousands of people following him to watch an 18-year-old tweet about how much he loves his girlfriend. I mean, there was no keys to his recruiting process in his Twitter feed. But it's just one of those things that people are so tuned in, and they're like, what if he makes that announcement on the internet? Or maybe I can use my Twitter account to persuade him. You know, and sometimes he would retweet the mean things people would say to him from certain schools, especially after he signed. But it's just bizarre. I mean, people get so caught up in it that there's, you know, 30, 40-year-old men and women out there trying to persuade an 18-year-old kid to where he should go play college football. I mean, that has to be the big difference, because you could want a kid, you know, you could send him a letter maybe before, but now there's that direct contact with those players via Facebook, Twitter, things like that. And that has to be one of the biggest changes, I would say.
Yeah, Greg, go ahead. Yeah.
This is magnified greatly over the last number of years. On Sunday night, for example, there were Twitter accounts that he was going to choose Missouri. And that was tweeted and then retweeted. And suddenly there was, I call it Twitter brush fire. Suddenly there was a brush fire that he was going to go to Missouri. Finally, his father came out and said, no, he hasn't made his decision yet. It turns out that on Wednesday he did announce he was going to Missouri, but was that premature or not? Who knows? I mean, it's hard. If you're looking for facts here, it's hard. There was a brush fire the previous week about Joe Paterno, and it's just hard to know sort of where this is going. It all gets magnified, and rumors spread really, really, really quickly.
Right. Bruce, you're still with us, right?
Yeah. The one thing I was going to say on that front is when it comes to recruiting, you're still dealing with 17-year-olds, and a lot of times you'll hear – a lot of them have followed recruiting when they were a sophomore or junior and seen how the other blue chip kids around the country handled it. And sometimes you'll see them get caught up where they're playing the game, and you'll hear these terms like silent commit. And this kid told this staff 6 months beforehand that he was always coming. Well, a lot of the fans buy that. That's message board stuff. But the reality is you don't know what that kid's telling any other coaching staff. And I think that, you know, as the guys were saying on the panel before, what's changed the most in the last year or two is the accessibility to these kids. And just in the last year, I think a lot of media people were on Twitter before, but I think high school recruits seem like they have really taken to Twitter in the last year. And because of that, you know, college coaches are very active on it. And I think now that fans see, you know, I can only imagine what a kid gets sent him. And I know we talked about this earlier in the segment about, you know, how grounded a kid must be to be able to navigate through it. I did a story on a kid who was really came from a really solid background, really sharp kid a few years ago. And even he got jaded by this. And you really, it's hard for these kids, I think, coming through it, to keep a real sense of perspective, because so much is being thrown at them, and it's only escalated with the media and the levels of media now, because there's so many more reporters who cover recruiting.
Right. A question from one of our listeners that I want to put to our panel here. Is it crazy to ask whether all of this has gotten too far out of control and to call for a return to more academic-centered athletic programs, or is this just not the time to ask that question in? Greg, maybe you start us off on that.
The first part of the question, is it crazy? Yes. This has gotten out of control. It's crazy. Now the second question, can you put the horse back in the barn? I don't know. I don't understand how you would even begin to do that. I mean, there is all this information is out there. All this easy, accessible information is out there. And people want to look at it. And they can look at it. Anyone with a laptop can look at it. As far as journalism is concerned, I think one of the things journalists need to be concerned is how far down the road do we want to go without confirmation and verification. But is this out of control? I think you only had to be here the other weekend when Green Beckham was walking around to see that this is out of control. This is an 18-year-old kid. Again, I said it earlier, but I'll say it again. Again, it is really, really hard to predict how an 18-year-old kid turns out. What's gonna happen to him physically, mentally, emotionally? How's that all going to work out? It's hard to know.
All right, Karen, you want to get in the conversation. Ben, you'll be next.
One thing I wanted to say about Twitter is last week, before the announcement, I was following both DGB and Mizzou. And as Twitter likes to say, it was just imploding. It was being throttled. I could not keep up. One thing that, looking at it from Doriel's perspective or any student's perspective, there are so many horrible comments from people who don't know this student, don't know his skills. All they know is he signed for Mizzou, and he gets throttled with insults. I am really grateful that Twitter is so fleeting. If he didn't see it in that moment, he would have to physically go back searching for it in order to see them. So I'm hoping that these idle comments from people who don't know this man from Adam, that he doesn't see them and he doesn't let them affect him.
Right. So the horse doesn't go back in the barn, as Greg says, until mass civility takes place over the land.
until college athletics stop making money. I mean, that's the thing here. I mean, there are people who are going to buy tickets next year to watch him play. So that, I mean, there's money tied up in this. If you pull the lens back far enough, as far as the journalism goes, I mean, is it a sense of, you know, do you want to cover a 16-year-old kid and talking about where he goes to college? I mean, is it a sense of what's right or what people want to know about? I mean, you have to walk that line and be careful of that too. It's bizarre, but I don't see a time where it's going to be any less. It will start going in the opposite direction.
Does he get as much?
Yeah, Bruce, go ahead, and then we'll come back to Karen.
Yeah, just to follow up on what Ben's saying, the money is so significant, and the coverage of recruiting. And look, I got asked this question on CBS the other day about is it out of hand, and I said yes. As somebody who spent 8 hours of straight broadcasting covering signing day, and I you know basically spent 2 years of my life in the state of Mississippi covering the inner workings of recruiting, I can speak firsthand about that part of it. And I also think that we in the media, and definitely I work for CBS, I had worked for ESPN, we broadcast a lot of recruiting related coverage, where it's high school games or shows about it, and that you know, that includes, you know, Fox and ESPN and CBS and the recruiting sites on the internet. And I think we're talking millions of dollars are involved in it, but I think also this is so tied into, you know, the original question that somebody asked a couple of minutes ago. This is so tied into where college athletics are. The genie is so far out of the bottle, you have no idea where the bottle is anymore, because we're talking about huge billion-dollar TV contracts. The days of all that stuff where it's the Ivy League model, and I'm talking about the Ivy League from like 50 years ago, we're nowhere near that. And I mean, we call them student athletes, but they're really athlete student first. That doesn't mean some of them aren't really bright and some of them don't do well in school. But the time spent that they are committed to their sport year-round, I think would shock a lot of academic people if they really knew what was involved in it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Dave Ridpath, you're with us still, right?
Yes, I'm here.
Now, you have some experience in the recruiting world. Do you think it's even possible to try to backpedal from where things are to a place where the academics were more prominent in the world of these students?
Well, probably not. I think Bruce is correct. I think the horse is kind of out of the barn, so to speak. And, you know, unless we change the model from the other side, and I'm not saying even going back to the Ivy League model, maybe changing things perhaps to where freshmen are ineligible again. And even, you know, the guaranteed scholarship certainly has a great educational component to it. And maybe even giving athletes another choice. Of course, that would mean the NBA and NFL have a greater responsibility for player development, like baseball does. I mean, those things would have to change, I think, to bring sanity to recruiting. But again, I'm not holding my breath.
You know, there's a comment from the chat room that sort of fits in with what we're talking about here. I think this is from John in the chat room. I feel like one thing they could do to improve things is to allow for an early signing period in football, like they've done in basketball. Students could fully commit and focus on academics from that point on, and it would likely cut down on the negative fan reaction to a certain extent. What do you think? Would that help? Bruce, why don't we kick that to you first, and then we'll go around the table here.
I don't think it would. I think here's why it's problematic. You can have it in college basketball, but it's a different calendar, different level, numbers of kids are involved. Whereas in college football, so many kids, you can say a kid is committing to a school, but the reality is because of these kids spend so much time devoted to football, they are committing to a coaching staff and a system that schemes that they run on the field. And so if a coaching staff gets fired or a coach decides I'm going to take another job, and a lot of those decisions happen from basically Thanksgiving to New Year's Day, you really can't have it. The other thing is if you have such an early signing period, you would have the issue of a lot of kids now commit to scholarship, to quote-unquote scholarship offers before their senior year starts. But so much of their academics, because the transcript work isn't really even close to done at that point, you really have a muddled picture on who's academically going to make it and who's not. So you're going to have a lot of chaos with that. You'd have a lot of chaos with when the coaches move and kids have already signed scholarship papers and they're locked into schools. Or I just think there's a lot of variables that would become a lot more problematic than they already are.
All right, Ben Fredrickson, you're here nodding.
Oh, that was a factor in Doriel's recruitment also. I mean, it's widely held. He never came out and said, you know, he said he picked Mizzou and all the other schools were second. But it was widely held that he was choosing between Arkansas and Missouri. And, you know, I think even as soon as December, I think Arkansas's offensive coordinator, the one he built a relationship with, went to take the head coaching job at UAB. So that's just an example of, here's somebody that he'd formed this relationship with, and if he would have said, you know, I'm committed, I'm going to Arkansas, then that change probably still would have happened, and he would have been left with a system that he thought he was going to be in that could be completely changed by the time he got there.
Right. Greg, other thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think back to the original question, are things ever going to go back to the way they were? And I think the answer is obviously no. I think reminiscing is always fun, but it's probably not really wise to spend a lot of time on that. And I think what people should spend time on is how do we deal with the situation that exists and how do we move forward and make the situation exist as good as it can be.
Okay. Another comment from our chat room from somebody named DG. The NCAA has actually eliminated a tremendous number of things colleges used to do to recruit. I don't see colleges being able to do more. For instance, recruits must now fly in on regularly scheduled airlines and no longer on private jets. Pinkel's move might result in a ban on how coaches can arrive. who knows, right?
That was an interesting point. I learned over the weekend that when Pinkel flew in the famous helicopter visit, Green Beckham actually came out and sat in the helicopter, which was a violation of NCAA rules, and Missouri had to report itself for that violation. So the NCAA rules go from very serious ones to what that one, which I think is kind of silly on its face.
Right. And what does that mean, they have to report themselves? I mean, is anything going to come of that?
Well, the way the NCAA works is that if you report a violation, it's usually rewarded with this lesser penalty. So for that, I would imagine it's something along the lines of a slap on the wrist. I don't know what exactly will come out of it. But if they wouldn't have reported it and like the Mizzou compliance office would not have turned it in itself, then it could have been a bigger punishment if the NCAA would have found it and then suck it on them.
You get a lot of credit with the NCAA for being honest, for fessing up to violations, especially one like this.
Like, oh, Mom, sorry, I stole the cookies out of the cookie jar. Please
yes,
don't
exactly.
be too mean to me here.
Yes.
Bruce, your thoughts on this? I mean, how does the NCAA decide where to draw the line here?
Well, you know, we talked about the helicopter, but when I was working on Meat Market, one of the trips that the Ole Miss staff took was on a private plane down to the Mississippi coast. You know, we went to the airport, and it was a lot of schools, especially the big SEC schools, and like we said, Missouri's going into the best football conference in the country now, where a lot of the schools have huge recruiting budgets and commitments, where a lot of the staff will go on these recruiting trips on private planes. And it's a different dynamic than, let's say, what, Kansas State or Iowa State or some of these, you know, UAB. That coach who was at Arkansas, Garrick McGee, he was traveling a lot different when he was at Arkansas than I bet he's going to be now that he's a head coach at UAB. And so while the NCAA wants to, and David could speak a lot better on this, while the NCAA wants to try to keep as level a playing field as it can, and while I was working on the book, they had done something where it came to the minutia of what the stationery could be look like that the schools would be able to send recruits notes on. I mean, at one point, Ole Miss had these pictures of their cheerleaders and what the Grove looked like and maybe Eli Manning's picture. By the end of that year, all of a sudden, it just basically had to be basic white stationery because it was a financial cost issue, they thought, for the lower level of Division One and what they could keep out. And I think that's – they're trying to keep things as level as they can on one sense, but on the reality is what you're offering in an education at, let's say, Missouri compared to some other school, where you can't say that a USC offer – isn't very different from San Jose State. And I think that's where the NCAA has so many rules and tries to keep things at a certain place that it becomes even more trouble than maybe it's worth.
Okay. Again, for our audience, this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about recruiting top athletes onto college teams. Joining me in the studio are Columbia, Missourian sports editor Greg Bowers, freelance reporter Ben Fredrickson, and MU Journalism Assistant Professor Karen Mitchell. Also on the phone is CBS sports columnist and commentator Bruce Feldman, and also Dave Ridpath, an assistant professor of sports administration at Ohio University. For those of you in our audience, you can join our conversation by giving us a call at 573-882-8925. You can also go online to kbia.org and join our online chat room. Just follow the link for Intersection. Dave Ridpath, your thoughts on this, the NCAA stuff. Bruce just kind of kicked it over your direction. What do you think about that, the way that the NCAA handles this and what they can and can't do that's productive here?
Well, I hope my phone line's a little bit better. I apologize for that. But
Yep, I think we can hear you more clearly now.
Great. Bruce is correct. I think the issue is the NCAA is trying for competitive equity, and there's no competitive equity between Ohio and Ohio State, Southeast Missouri, and Missouri Columbia. I think you have to understand that the big dogs are going to eat, and we probably support them, and the other schools need to be able to do what they can and not try to keep up, because that is where the implosion of college athletics is going to happen, probably at the mid-major level. Personally, I see even further separation and divisions coming soon. No reason why schools like Ohio University, where I work now, is trying to compete in the same game as Ohio State. Certainly in recruiting, it's not a game they can win.
Okay. Actually, I want to ask a question somewhat related to that. I mean, you're talking about the big dogs doing what they're going to do and a separation there. Karen Mitchell, you've worked with club sports on the MU campus, and I wonder what you make of all this from that perspective. I mean, we're talking about some very high-level recruiting machines here at the sort of big sports programs at these big universities. What about that compared to other sports that are not as well equipped to attract players onto campus for that?
I'm not really sure, Ruben, what you're...
Just in terms of you know, the football team, the basketball team, the high-level sports are going after students to come here because of their
right.
athletic prowess. What about all of the other sports that are not necessarily, you know, at that level in terms of their profile in the community and elsewhere?
I think from the student-athlete's perspective, I think that they know how to put that in relative perspective. For example, the softball team. Those young women are extremely excited to be recruited by Coach Earlywine. And for them, it's probably as exciting as if they were a DGB. But they don't get all the perks. But I think throughout, you know, from grade school on, when you pick a sport, you start to learn at an early age how important that sport is in society. And I think by the time they hit their senior year of high school and looking to come to college, I think they have a pretty good understanding of what they're not going to get based on the sport that they're in.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Doriel could probably be a very highly recruited, you know, track athlete as well, but he obviously picked football. I would imagine that some of that attention and some of the, I guess, the prominence that football has in our country made a role in that. He's really going to specialize in that and maybe, you know, continue to do track in college if he decides to.
Well, part of it is the promise that maybe they might go pro.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean,
yeah,
isn't that
absolutely.
A big piece of this mm-hmm. whole thing that, hey, come to our college? I mean, Bruce, you definitely made this clear in the book that part of the sell for some of these coaches is, look, I'm going to coach you into the pros. These other schools are not going to be able to do that, right?
Yeah, and for a lot of kids, that's all they – mostly what they know is, hey, I just watched the Super Bowl and I saw – Tom Brady and these guys have these kind of endorsement deals, and there's a huge amount of celebrity to it, and they don't necessarily see the side of, you know, some of these five-star kids, they don't end up playing college football anywhere. I'll use the example, the guy who physically most reminded me of Doriel Green Beckham is a guy named DeAndre Brown, who was recruited a year after I worked on a meat market, and he's from Southern Mississippi. And he's a 6'6", 230-pound kid who has really good speed and is a really spectacular athlete. And his freshman, academically, he was very shaky. And he ended up at Southern Miss as opposed to in the SEC. His freshman year had a great year, but at the end of the year, he broke his leg. And it was a horrific one of those kinds of Joe Theismann kind of breaks on TV in a bowl game. And he really was never quite the same, and I don't know, maturity-wise, he never was able to handle everything that was coming at him. And he's a guy if you would have looked at the recruiting process, he was a locked guy. You'd say he's a three and out. That term a lot of people hear around college football means he's going to go 3 years, and then as soon as he's eligible, he's going to get drafted, and he'll go for the NFL money. Well, 4 years later, he's not in the NFL, and you wonder, you know, what's going to become of him. And I think, unfortunately, most kids, because they've been told how great they are, not just in the old days of like by everybody around them in their community, but now you got these celebrity coaches who they see on TV, they're also chasing after them. And now you have all these fans on Twitter and Facebook also telling them how great they are. They're only going to see the NFL model of what the next step is, and that's all that really matters to most of them.
Right. And how likely is it that one of these star recruits is actually going to make it into the NFL at some point?
I love the NCAA commercials about how many of the student athletes are going to be pros in something other than athletics. I think that's a point that they really need to drive home. This kid that Bruce was talking about, you know, I don't know the stats, but in my mind, it's as likely that he's going to grow up to be a street bum as it is that he'll grow up to be the president of Greyhound. Without the education that they need and is undersold in the recruiting process, if they get injured, if they're a three-and-out player, their future is not very bright.
Greg, your thoughts on that?
I think this goes back to what we were talking about earlier. There is a huge crapshoot angle to all this. What does a 17, 18-year-old kid turn out to be? Green Beckham, when he was around campus, and clearly he's an impressive physical specimen, and he may well turn out to be a star, but there are just as many stories of top recruits who don't end up being stars and don't end up impacting their college programs. So we'll see. Now, would I rather go forward with my college program with Green Beckham? Sure I would. But chances are there's some sort of unknown recruit coming in who will impact the program too. So, it's a bunch of things going on here. Not all of them good, but, you know, with 18-year-old kids, you can't predict what will happen.
Ben, your thoughts?
I mean, I think there's Mazzuza has both examples. You know, you had Jeremy Maclin, who was a pretty big recruit coming in, but then you also had Denario Alexander, who was a two-star, who ended up being one of the best receivers, who they actually used to kind of lure Doriel in. I'm sure they brought him in and talked to Denario. So it's just like, I mean, Mazzuza had a lot of success with those two-star, three-star guys who turned into be better than people thought, you know, but now it'll be interesting to see, now that they landed the big fish, how's he going to turn out? So it's just wait and see.
Right. And what do you think? What's your sense of where this is going to go? Do you think Mizzou's going to keep going after the big fish here and try to build?
I think there's a couple things. I think they pushed extremely hard for Doriel because he was in-state, and I think they wanted to make that statement. I don't know if they would have pushed as hard for the top recruit if the top recruit would have been in Texas. I think that makes a statement. But I think going to the SEC, they're going to start pulling out the stops more often. I mean, you saw it. They were, when he came to campus, they were doing the NCAA tiptoeing that is done in a lot of SEC schools. Like, for example, when he was at the basketball game, they couldn't introduce him to the crowd. They couldn't put him on the big screen. But they brought him through the farthest entrance and paraded him around the court, you know, but it wasn't an introduction. And those are the kind of things that the SEC schools do, and that's what Missouri is going to have to do if they want to recruit those players.
Okay. Greg, any last thoughts? We've got a few seconds left here.
Yeah, I don't know if Missouri is going to be in the running for the big fish around the country, but I think they will be in the running for Missouri's big fish. I mean, the big fish in the state. Guard your borders and get them in. And I think that's what the symbolism of this signing is all about.
Okay. Unfortunately, that's all the time that we're going to have for today. I'd like to thank our guests, First Columbia, Missourian sports editor Greg Bowers, freelance reporter Ben Fredrickson, MU journalism assistant professor Karen Mitchell, and on the phone, I'd like to thank CBS sports columnist and commentator Bruce Feldman, and also Dave Ridpath, assistant professor of sports administration at Ohio University. We'd like to remind those of you enjoying this as a rebroadcast that Intersection takes place live for a full hour from 2 to 3 every Monday. You can join us each Monday afternoon by KBIA or by going online to kbia.org and following the link for Intersection. There you'll be able to watch a video feed of the program, submit your questions and comments, and participate in an online chat with others in the audience. You'll also find a video archive of all of our past programs, including the full hour of today's conversation. Intersection is broadcast from the Reynolds Journalism Institute and is a project of RJI and KBIA. Today's program was produced by Raymond Tungekar. Travis McMillan is our technical director, with production assistance from Leah Becerra. Pat Akers is our audio producer. Executive producers Mike Dunn and Mike McKean. I'm Ruben Stern. I'd like to thank you for joining us. Have a great week.